Welcome to the Money Advantage Podcast, empowering business owners with the permission to think differently about money so that you can consciously choose to live a meaningful and fulfilled life now. Our passion is making money simple, fun, and doable, helping you feel great about your money and getting your money working for you so you can thrive.
Good morning and welcome back to the Money Advantage Podcast. This is Rachel Marshall and Bruce Wehner. And today we have a wonderful episode for you today because Bruce, as I mentioned last week, was out of the office. He went to the Nelson Nash Institute think tank for 2024 and he's back with some fresh insights, Bruce. And I'm really excited to talk with you about your experience and really the reason why I see this applying to somebody who's listening right now is that when you hear about the think tank, the Nelson Nash Institute think tank, you are hearing from the original designer and creator and publisher of the infinite banking concept, which we talk about regularly on this show. This is a way to preserve capital, store it, become your own banker, take over the banking function, and really recover control in your financial life, not just for yourself, but also for your children and for children after you. And so it can become a legacy, a financial legacy creator as well. There's so much benefit for the infinite banking concept. So Nelson Nash created it. Then you have the Nelson Nash Institute that has really formed this band of the primary disciples of the Nelson Nash way of thinking, the infinite banking concept, who are then remaining true to that original vision and making sure that they make it publicly available to as many people as possible without modifying or watering down or diluting the original message, the original intent of infinite banking. And so that is why this think tank is valuable and why it's valuable for you to listen today is because if you truly want to regain control of your financial life, it's best to go back to the original source, the original principles for how you can do that in the most powerful way possible. And that is what we're here to talk about today. So Bruce, I know you're a little under the weather here. Sorry to make you be the main focal point of this conversation. We'll hopefully keep it conversational, but I am really excited to dive in today.
Yeah, I think the way we should start this is giving a little history of why the Nelson Nash Institute was actually established.
Awesome.
Utilizing dividend paying, participating whole life insurance as a way to take over the banking function in your life is not anything that hasn't been around for literally hundreds of years. I mean, it's been around for hundreds of years. And what's interesting is that, Nelson used to always say that, words matter, and he would get frustrated at the insurance companies because the insurance companies, they like premium, okay? I mean, they're a business, and so they like premium coming in. And yet, when Nelson was explaining this to them, and this isn't anything special, this is how you can utilize the current products that they have, they were really not on board of him using the word bank, because they kept saying that we are not a bank. And Nelson kept reiterating the fact that I'm not saying you're a bank, I'm saying that you can take over the banking process by using the institution of insurance to actually do the banking function. Now, Nelson himself admitted that, the institutions of insurance cannot take over the transactions, the daily transactions, such as checks, getting currency in a short period of time, ATMs that we have now, which is a good example of how banks have changed over the time period, where you could actually just go to a little box and get currency out of it, where you used to have to actually go to a physical bank location and get currency out of it. So it proves that banks have even changed over time periods.
For increasing convenience and quicker transactions and smaller transactions. So that's the piece of banking that you're saying infinite banking doesn't do very well, because you don't want to have 16 transactions on a daily basis to your power company and to Target and to Amazon and a $5 charge for picking up a prescription at the pharmacy. That wouldn't make any sense. It's not built for that kind of small volume.
Correct.
Or and, small transaction, high volume, small transaction, I guess is probably a better way of saying it.
Correct. And because insurance companies are very conservative institutions, which is one of the reasons they're such a great place to actually store your money, because they are conservative, they didn't like the word bank because they thought people were going to sue them for using the word bank. And it was understandable. And this is one of the reasons the Nelson Nash Institute was established, because insurance agents were actually selling this as a marketing tool or a sales tool. And Nelson got upset about that. And Nelson never lost control when he got upset. He was a very calculated Christian man. But he said, this actually saved me in the early 80s by how he was disciplined enough to put money into cash value life insurance as a young man and build up a pool of money. And then in the early 80s, when inflation was out of control, much like it is now, he had a commercial real estate properties that were adjusting the interest rates, and he didn't know how he can make the payments. And he got down on his knees on several occasions and prayed to God, you know, what can I do? And it finally hit him, because this wasn't common knowledge at the time, even though he knew it as an agent. But that's how uncommon it was, even an agent like himself. But one night it hit him, well, I have all this cash value. I could borrow against the life insurance cash value, pay off the real bank, and thus I'm acting like a bank, and I will make my payments back towards my insurance policy instead of to the commercial bank. And what that did was, that meant he was recapturing the banking function. He wasn't interrupting the compounding of his money at the insurance company, because he wasn't taking his money out. He was actually taking a loan against his money as collateral, and then he was paying it back. Now, that was in the early
days. Let's zoom out from that for just a second, because I think it's profound that Nelson did not need to have someone else educate him on all of the benefits of infinite banking in order to start using it. So he had funded diligently these policies before he had the epiphany, out of the necessity of his circumstance, that he could use it as a bank in terms of a banking function to access capital from his policy or against his policy, and then be able to use that capital. So the reason why he was funding this in the first place wasn't to have a volume of cash value that he was in control of, that he was able to use. He wasn't thinking that way originally. That concept came out of the necessity of his circumstance. The reason he was funding a policy to begin with was, I mean, you probably can speak to this better than I can to know his actual intent for why he did this over the years. But I mean, this was just a common way of doing life insurance, to have something that would be a whole life insurance product that for sure would pay out when you passed away at the time. And I mean, was there any other reason that you know of from talking with Nelson that he was so faithful to pay those premiums initially?
Well, I would say, and I've mentioned this before on the podcast, and it's hard for people to understand this in today's world, but prior to 1979, and definitely prior to 1973. And 1979 is when the 401k came about, and 1973 is when the IRA came about. Prior to that time period, this was the place, mutual life insurance companies were the place where people in the U.S. stored capital. And they did it because it was a rock-solid institution, and you could not inflate the money supply. And yes, it had a death benefit, and that was very, very important, but it was just common knowledge that people would do this. And I think I mentioned this on the podcast before. My father actually took out a policy in me in 1963. And this, and that was not uncommon. I mean, people would do this for their children. People would do this on themselves. It was just a way of life until 1973 when the IRA came about. And once again, Nelson was an Austrian economist, which believed in the Austrians, even to this day, they believe that sound money is the and sound money meaning that you do not inflate the money supply. You actually save first and then spend, because when you borrow against a commercial bank or with a commercial bank, they're able to do fractional reserve banking, and that fractional reserve banking inflates the money supply. Mm-hmm. And inflating the money supply actually causes inflation. And Rachel, if I can, if you remind me, we have a question that came up, and our listeners are really important to us. So let's answer this question. So
yes,
the Explorer said, "Hey guys, question: do you believe the advantages of IBC outweigh the risk of USD hyperinflation? And should we keep a lower net cash value as a hedge?" I'm not sure what you mean by lower net cash value as a hedge.
Net.
I would think.
Net.
I
meaning,
would think.
Yeah.
I would think you would want to keep a higher net cash value as a hedge.
Net being the amount of cash value versus the amount you've borrowed against. Maybe he means, should you maximize your policy loans? Because that would be lower net cash value. If you had 100,000, but you've borrowed against by 90,000, then you'd have a lower net. Dexplorer, could you clarify what you mean by a lower net cash value?
Yeah, that'd be great. And let's just think through this a little bit. So this question comes up all the time. They say, well, if we're in a hyperinflation environment, where's the best place to keep your money? That's kind of the question now everybody says. Because pulling more policy loans to access and spend the money rather than saving. I would say not spend the money, but invest the money would be a better hedge against inflation. Although, Dexplorer, let's think about, and the nice thing is at the Nelson Nash think tank, one of the things they do every year is they have an industry panel of executives from the mutual insurance companies. They have seven of them from the major, the ones that actually accept the infinite banking concept. And they all talked about the fact that dividends are interest rate sensitive. So as if hyperinflation is going to also correlate with higher bond prices, which they will be, and dividends returns are based upon bond yields and appreciation, then dividends will actually increase in a hyperinflation environment, or just an inflation environment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that would mean that the hedge against just having your cash value there may not completely give you a one-to-one correlation for hyperinflation, but it certainly will be related to the inflation. So in other words, as bond prices go up, then dividends will go up. And so having just simple cash value will be. Now, to simply take it out and spend it, I think what the Explorer is actually saying is, you know, this money's not going to be worth very much. So why wouldn't we just go ahead and spend it? Well, if you're spending it on assets that aren't doing anything for you, such as clothing or anything else that would be a bigger ticket item, which clothing isn't, and it's a depreciating asset, then why would you be spending money on a depreciating asset? Because now you have even a bigger arbitrage between the inflation and the depreciating asset.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you spend it on something that is going up because of inflation, then you have a better chance to actually outpace inflation. I would say, though, I would actually say that cash is king in this situation. I would sit on cash, and there's a reason why Warren Buffett is sitting on hundreds of billions of dollars of cash right now, because in a hyperinflationary environment, there will be a crash of assets that will go down. And at that time, people that have cash can actually gobble up those assets at a lower net value, and then will come out of it and grow, thus overcoming the hyperinflation from the previous years. So,
yeah, Bruce, I love the depth that you're answering this, because I mean, when Dexplorer, when you're asking the question, I see two parts of the question. First, if you have a hyperinflationary environment, dollars are becoming less valuable, interest rates are going up, you're in a position where you need a place to store money that is the best location to store money, which you need this in any environment, hyperinflationary or any other environment as well. You need to have the best location to store cash that you can access and use. And the reason that we talk about using infinite banking is that it is the highest return location that you can place your dollars and still have them accessible and usable. Most people think, I need to go get put my money at risk in the stock market or invest it somehow for a higher return, but they lose the accessibility of the cash and they lose the safety. So when you look at the three components, safety, liquidity, and growth, you really want to have cash storage in a place that has as much of that as you can get. So if you're maintaining the safety, then that means it's not dropping in dollar value. If you are maintaining the liquidity, that means you can access and use it. And if you want the highest growth rate possible for something that is growing or something that's liquid and safe, that's why we're talking about using cash value life insurance to do that. Then the other piece that you're mentioning, higher net or lower net cash value, I think behind that question, you're saying, is it really not so valuable to hold the cash value in a life insurance policy in a hyperinflationary environment? Should I instead go put those dollars to work in real estate or businesses or some kind of investment that's going to outpace inflation, thinking the cash value is not so valuable here, the investment is more valuable? The challenge there is that we still want to have liquid cash available for when prices fall, as Bruce is saying. The other challenge is that you want to be in a situation that you have accessible dollars to be able to use. And you also want to think about the fact that, as Bruce is talking about the inflationary environment, your dividends are likely going to increase, which is going to increase the growth rate on your cash value. So it's not an invalid place to keep your dollars in a inflationary environment. I don't know if that is clarifying anything that you said.
No, I think it's very good. I think if we go back to the basics, and that's one of the reasons why you attend the Nelson Nash Institute as somebody in the industry every year, is because you go back to the fundamental basics. And I'd like to go back to those basics right now, because it's one of the reasons that Nelson established the Nelson Nash Institute, is to go back to the basics. Mm. So the first thing is, you need to think long term. Unfortunately, in our TikTok and social media environment, you're going to get inundated with this short-term thinking. Look, you only need to work 1 hour a day and you're going to be a multimillionaire. I've seen this over and over in social media. Even though we are intelligent human beings that watch this, including people that watch our podcast, there is a need to feel like we can game the system. But deep down, we know that that doesn't make any sense. So think long range. Number two, don't be afraid to capitalize. And the number one thing with any bank or any business, which is, this is what you're doing, you're establishing the banking process, which is a business. Banking is a business. You have to think long range, and you can't be afraid to capitalize. Capital is king. The third thing is, you don't steal the peas. You don't steal from your business. So you pay back the loans. Fourth thing is, you don't do business with banks, because as Nelson proved, and many people prove to themselves every day, is we have a trickle, well, not even trickle, it's a flood, on average of 34.5% of our capital flying out of our control for financing costs. And five may be the most important thing. Rethink your thinking, because this is the problem right now. And I've seen this over and over with people that are actually inquiring with the Money Advantage to implement this, is they're trying to solve the problem that they see using traditional methods. And then they're talking about, well, I'm not sure this is a good rate of return. I think I can get more money if I just leave my money invested. And Nelson says this in his book, in his introduction to his book. And he says, this book demonstrates that your need for finance during your lifetime is much greater than your need for protection. Now, people that already, like myself and you, Rachel and Lucas, we don't really have a need for finance because we have prescribed this. In other words, I'm not saying we don't need have a need for finance, but we are very disciplined. We do pay off our credit cards. We use our policies to buy cars and so on and so forth. But high net worth individuals a lot of times will say, well, I can just pay cash for everything. Or even middle-class individuals say, I just pay for cash for everything. Well, you're still financing that because you're giving up the opportunity to earn money on that money that you were using. And then the second thing he says right at the beginning of the book in page 3, this book is not about investments of any kind. It is about how one finances the things in life, which can certainly include investments. It is not about rates of return. As time goes by, interest rates are up and interest rates are down, but the process of banking goes on no matter what is happening. And this is the problem. And this is why I said, say, number five in Nelson's tenets, rethink your thinking, is the smart. I have people that talk to us as potential clients are smarter than me, and they complicate this all the time, probably because they're too smart. They're trying to figure out the angle here. This is just about control and certainty. And when you have control and certainty, you can take advantage of situations and eliminate risk. And this is the one of the basic tenets that we are trying to do with the Nelson Nash Institute, because what happens, Nelson found out when he first wrote the book in 2000 that he was slowly building a following, and that following actually accelerated as the 2001.com crash came about, the 2008 mortgage crisis came about, and people saw that certainty was a really important thing. And so the momentum came. And then when we had social media started to explode and then COVID, now all of a sudden people were looking at this concept, but they were looking at it as a sales process. And Nelson even says in the book, this is not a sales process. This is actually a banking process. And so he decided that he was going to start an institute so that people can become authorized practitioners of how to do this properly. And properly in his mind was that the design of these policies would not have one set way of doing it, but listen to the client and see what their needs were, but also be an advisor. And this is the problem that a lot of people are seeing out in the world today with the infinite banking, is that we have people just selling policies that don't understand how they work, and they are not advising the pros and the cons of different designs. Mm-hmm. And the Institute attempts to educate people on those different pros and cons, because I've said it 100 times on the podcast. There, if you pull one lever in a design, another lever goes up. And if that lever goes up too far, you actually bring in uncertainty into the situation. And that is what the Institute is attempting to solve in a variety of ways. So we have Dexplore said, oh, thank Dexplore, says, great answer. I pulled the policy loans mainly into gold and silver. Great. And I do think gold and silver is a good hedge against inflation. The problem, Dexplore, is with gold and silver, and I own silver. I don't own any more gold. And I won't go into why, basically because it's not as fungible as silver. But remember, gold and silver are still volatile. You know, they're going to go up and down. So the problem with gold and silver is just like any other volatile asset, is you got to know when to get in and out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
going to speak to that for a second. Bruce, I feel like I have 1,000 thoughts as you're going. I'm like, okay, how do I figure out how to share these and which ones are most valuable to the next part of the conversation? So I want to comment on gold and silver real quick. So Dexplore, my husband, Lucas, and I did purchase a lot of gold and silver back in 2000, I guess, 8 and 9-ish time frame. And our idea was that we wanted to hold that long term. Great way to think about a long-term store of value. The challenge we came into, this was before we knew about infinite banking and before we were using it, we came into a challenge that we needed the capital to start a business and we had not considered our need for liquidity, which meant then when we did have the requirement to get capital so we could start our business and be able to fund all the initial startup needs in our business, we thought, well, we have cash. That's great. Their cash is in gold and silver. The problem is the value had dropped in half and it was not as easy to sell it. You can't just, you know, tomorrow get the cash from the gold and silver. You have to go find a person who wants to purchase it and you have to, usually they're buying it at whatever price and you're losing out on part of what you have paid for. I can't remember how all the terms go, but it's not as liquid. And yes, it was volatile at the time. It might be a long-term store of value over decades or even centuries, which is what our initial ambition was, but we weren't thinking about the shorter term that we needed to be able to access the capital. Now, I do like the opposite direction from what we did, that you're saying the money is in life insurance first, then you're borrowing against the cash value and putting that into gold and silver. The challenge is if you want to access that capital or pay off your policy loan so you have the ability to use that cash for something else, just know that at whatever time you want to be able to do that, you may not have the ability just to sell the gold and silver to pay off the loan to be able to deploy that capital in another source.
Rachel, that's a great example of how having cash value actually makes all your other assets even more valuable. Because we talk about this in the investment world as sequence of return risk. So example, if housing prices or commercial real estate prices have actually plummeted and you have most of your capital in those assets, and you need capital, you certainly don't want to sell those assets while they're down.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have what's called a buffer asset, which insurance is a great, cash value insurance is a great buffer asset that you can go grab money from or borrow against the cash value and not Absolutely. Have to sell your, if anybody wants to get a really good explanation of this, go back and, research our two podcasts with Dr. Wade Fowle, and he explains this great. And he has a great book on this that you can buy off of Amazon
I'll try to link those also in the live chat if I get a chance to do that. But you can go to themoneyadvantage.com and on there, go to the blog page, search Wade Fowle. Wade, WadePhaU is how you spell.
PFAU.
PF. My goodness. PFAU. Sorry. I'm thinking PhD. Okay. PFAU. All right. So one other thing that was a really key point that I wanted to bring out from something that you said is this idea that you can be too smart to take action. And I think the challenge here is something that I'm going to try to explain this the best way possible and the quickest possible, but it can be really easy for me to overanalyze something and to spend a lot of time and energy creating fixing a problem here and here and here and here and here. And the way it's showed up specifically most recently in our family life has been training our kids. So for instance, and I'm going to just make a quick analogy. If you have an expectation for your young children to leave the house when you say it's time to go, put on your shoes, feed the dog, go to the bathroom, get your jacket, get your shoes. Well, first, you're having to be the brain to remind them to do all of the steps. And if you have multiple children, now you're the brain to remind all of the children to do all of the steps. And you're also following up behind them to do all of those steps. And it's a lot of mental work. It's draining for the parent who is trying to wrangle all these, you know, loose ends and make something happen. If you instead, which is something that we're really doing, is to implement systems and training and have a checklist for each child to have the five items that they need to do before they exit the house, and you have an accountability partner with another child, and that becomes a system. So you can just say, you give them 5 minutes before it's time to go, here, go start your getting out of the door checklist. And they're ready to go peacefully. Now, the training process to get there requires the mental energy to think through how to do it, create the system, train the system. And sometimes it's been really easy for me to say, well, it's really difficult to put a system in place. So I just have resorted to my life is going to be continuous, you know, wrangling and making sure that I'm being the brain for all of the people to do all of the things and make all of the things happen. It's just exhausting as a parent. And when you think about your financial life that way, if instead of trying to do a high return over here and cash over here and pay your mortgage over here and pay off debt over here and plan for college for your kids over here and figure out what you're going to do for your parents if you're going to financially be responsible for them and also handle taxes and also handle passing on a legacy and also think there's just so many components of financial life that if you're trying to make sure you're handling all the pieces without a system, it's very difficult. But if you just put a system in place that allows you to do everything else better, then you can spend your energy on building the system, which infinite banking is a system. It's not just a product that sits beside the rest of your system. It is a system that allows you to do everything else better in your life. And that's why putting the attention on the thing that sometimes might seem more difficult or more challenging to understand then answers so many other questions for you in other areas of your life. And so instead of trying to figure out everything, it's better just to be committed to control and taking over the banking function. And that will inform all of your other decision making and make it a lot easier.
Yeah, and I would say, but it's a process, not a product.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens, I mean, Nelson says this in the book, you know, you could save in your home. You could save in a CD. You could save cash in a drawer in your house. And if somebody will lend against those things, then that would be great to have. But the fact of the matter is, until something else comes up around, whole life insurance has other benefits that actually allow the process of banking to be better without having to start your own brick and mortar bank.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Nelson would actually say that's not even good because you're inflating the money supply when you start a brick and mortar bank. And he was very against of inflating the money supply. And this is why we're in this inflationary environment. This is why we have a propensity for war, because we can print more money and certain corporations get, they benefit from this. This is why we have certain corporations that know they can borrow and be bailed out by the government. And all of this, Nelson was not very happy with, and he thinks it's actually bringing normal Americans to be a slave of the banking system, because we are taught by corporations to consume, to consume, to consume. That's the marketing, consume, to consume. So we actually use the money that we have coming in and we go buy frivolous stuff on it. And then when we need something really important, guess where we have to go? We have to go to the bank to actually ask for a loan and permission to get that money. And then we have to pay it back on their terms. And that is like being shackled by a system that is controlling you.
And benefiting from it.
And benefiting from it. We have a tremendous amount of listeners this morning. I don't know if it's because we changed the Monday morning or
it
if it's
could
a
be, I don't
topic,
know.
but please, we would love to hear the people, what kind of questions they have this morning. And we will continue now talking about the Nelson Nash Institute think tank. First thing I'd like to...
I was just going to say, if we can make sure that at some point today you answer, maybe what was the top takeaway for somebody and maybe the top main focuses that people inside the Nelson Nash Institute feel are top priority right now. That would be awesome.
Yeah. So first thing I want to acknowledge is that Mary Nelson's wife died a week ago Thursday.
Oh, wow.
Right before the think tank. And it was actually, I talked to Kim Stearns, which is David Stearns' wife, who is Nelson and Mary's daughter. She actually said it was actually a blessing because Mary was suffering from dementia for a couple of years. And so, but Mary was a real, as you can imagine, a very, very sweet individual, caring individual, supported Nelson over his career, raised a wonderful family, included grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And a big announcement was Lee, David, and Kim's daughter has now come on to the Institute to help David run the Nelson Nash Institute as communications director. So
oh, awesome.
The third generation of Nashes will now be involved in the Institute. So
that's awesome.
That was actually a big, big takeaway to this. Let's go back to why the Institute was actually established. The Institute was established because Nelson was seeing this happening out in the marketplace where people were claiming they were doing infinite banking, but they were not following the five basic tenets. And one of the biggest ones that he was upset about was that they were suggesting that you use index universal life or variable universal life or universal life that doesn't have the same type of certainties. And he writes about this in the book on one of the chapters about universal life. And when he did that, he said, we have to have a program that if a person's going to call this infinite banking, that they actually understand Austrian economics, they understand whole life insurance in general, and why it is a rock solid institution that's been around longer than any of these other types of insurance, and why you should be using it. And so that was the reason the Institute was set up. Now, what was the biggest takeaway from this particular think tank, which I've attended since 2009, I've attended every one of them except one. I did miss one year. The biggest takeaway was that the general public is starting to see the value of this tremendously. The insurance companies were talking about how much premium was actually flowing to the insurance companies because people do understand that the banking system is teetering and it's not a great place to store your money. And the insurance companies are actually benefiting from this. And the other thing that the takeaway is that people also understand that the inflating the money supply is affecting their daily lives through inflation. And so they are trying to take the banking function back into their own lives. Now, that's not going to affect. Now, I know people may think about that. Well, how's that going to keep? Because other people are still using banks. Well, if you get enough people to utilize whole life insurance to actually save before they spend, then banks will have competition and they will not be able to inflate the money supply as much. And if you're not inflating the money supply as much, then inflation cannot happen as much. And so if enough people adopt the save before you spend philosophy, then there will be less money in the money supply and inflation will actually, it will never go away because, I shouldn't say never, but more likely it will never go away because we will always have a Federal Reserve type system, but it will be lessened And that was one of the biggest takeaways. The momentum of people using this system is in great effect right now. The biggest challenge is what I said at the very beginning, is people to rethink their thinking, to get away from typical ways of thinking of rates of return. I have to have my money somewhere where I get a great rate of return because that's what I'm taught. And that is because people can only grasp right now from their way of thinking is, oh, I'm going to get X amount of rate of return over here, X amount of return over here. They don't think about the other benefits involved in the situation. And so Nelson says in his book, it's not about rates of return. It's about control and certainty. And the control and certainty could potentially get you a greater rate of return. But I'll tell you, the biggest thing it gets you is the certainty and the peace of mind. I was telling the group that I was around, we had several breakout sessions, that I had just made a premium payment of $10,000 on one of my old policies. And I was excited about making that payment. And it's weird because the general public, a lot of times, just see the premium. They're like dreading the premium. Oh, I got to make this premium payment. I don't understand that mindset, because when I make a $10,000 premium payment now, my cash value goes up by $25,000. Why? Because I've been doing this for years and years and years. I don't know about you guys, but $10,000 and it goes up by $25,000, that's a pretty neat thing that happens. And though it's
Bruce,
not,
I'm so excited to look forward to that. And that's why, as we talk about our Marshall Family Bank and the updates on that, I mean, Lucas and I have policies that right now we have about $50,000 a year going into premium, and it's over the span of about 2 months because that's the way that we've set up our policy. So all of our
issue dates.
Yeah. So because of that, basically it's $50,000 a year at this one chunk in time. We're spending the whole year planning for this. We're setting the dollars aside. We're getting ready for it. And it's not doing as much for us while it's waiting to go into premium. And as soon as we pay that premium, we see a giant increase in our cash value. It's not overcoming more than what we've put in, like you are yet, Bruce, because we're still in the capitalization phase of one of our policies and just about to be out of it with another one of our policies. But we know what's possible and we know how the concept works. And so I just want to reiterate for somebody who might not yet be in Bruce's position, that's what you have to look forward to.
Yeah, that's thinking long range. And I'm telling you, as you get older, that certainty it's such a great way to live. I mean, it's just such a comforting way to live that you're like, oh, this is really, really nice. And I get to pay this premium. Dex Borer actually said he met Nelson in 2018 at the think tank. Well, Dex, I was probably there with you. He actually lived in a suburb of Birmingham, Alabama, that I grew up in. Yes, Nelson lived in Birmingham, Alabama, and he loved Birmingham, actually. He loved the University of Georgia. He loved flying airplanes. And if you don't understand his love for airplanes, then read the book. And he actually uses an analogy of flying in airplanes. And what every pilot knows is when you fly into a wind, your airplane has to actually overcome the wind to actually move forward. And that's the same way when we finance things. If we finance way too many things, our money actually has to overcome the financing cost. And he says that if you were in an airplane and this is happening, the best thing to do would be just to land and wait for this wind to actually go away. Because eventually, if you know anything about wind currents, they either go clockwise or counterclockwise. And so if you're flying into a wind current, if you wait long enough, that system will go by and the wind current will actually shift and you'll get a tailwind. So that's what Nelson is saying. If you're patient with your system will actually get tailwinds and actually get to fly faster. It's analogous to my wife and I spend some time in Arizona. When we come to Arizona, it takes us about 3 hours and 10 minutes to get here because we're flying against the jet stream that goes from west to east. But then when we fly back to St. Louis, we're flying with the jet stream, and it only takes anywhere between 2 hours and 30 and 2 hours and 40 minutes. So it's a lot faster when we're flying west to east because of the system. So it's
I'm going to add something to that because something really popped up in my mind. And then we have a great comment here from David Dowdy as well. So before we cover your comment, David, Bruce, there's an idea in our culture and society that we solve the matter that we see. And this can be as simple as we have an ache or pain on our, on our finger, and we're going to go solve that problem when really maybe the thing causing it might be high blood pressure or diabetes or a problem that's much more deep and under the surface. And the challenge that comes from band-aiding problems is that you're never going to really solve, if you don't solve the fundamental problem, you'll not be able to correct the thing on the surface. And this makes me think of economic value of certainty. And here's why. Bruce, you mentioned it's very easy with our way of thinking in our world today to think about rate of return. Well, that's on the surface. That's way up here. If it's your skin, it's on the epidermis level, way up at the top. If it's the crust of the earth, we're talking about the crust. There's the mantle underneath, the core beneath that. We need to go down deep to the surface, the principle causing the problem on the surface. And so, Bruce, you're saying rates of return are the thing way up here that we try to solve because we can see it, we can feel it, we can touch it, we can taste it. It's much more tangible than thinking about certainty. I mean, certainty is a very deep concept. It's a very philosophical concept. And it also is something that is more abstract. But there's a powerful article I'm going to link right here in the show notes, or I'm sorry, in the chat, called The Economic Value of Certainty. And Lucas or Bruce and I did a podcast on this back in 2019. This is an article by Les McGuire, and he talks about how you have the economic value of certainty. If you have certainty in your financial life, you're able to make a lot of changes in everything else, and you're able to be more free in making financial decisions because you're not limited by an uncertain, unstable foundation. So Bruce, as you're saying, we can't just focus on the rate of return up here. The problem is if we look at just what's on the surface, it's rate of return. Way beneath that, we need control and certainty. And if we can shift our desperation to fix problems from the surface level to fixing the root issue, we would solve the banking function. We would solve certainty. We would solve financial control. And if we solve that, all of these other superficial issues that are on the surface would not be in our life, and we wouldn't have to continue fixing and fixing and putting all these band-aids on surface level issues. So I wanted to share that before we go into David Dowdy's comment here. Bruce, I'll let you take, well, let me read it, and then I'd love to hear your comments on this because this is something that we talk about regularly. But He saw the problems in the IUL space. So he said, I used to have an IUL, that's indexed universal life, and now have a WL policy, that's whole life. The reason I switched was that I was never told that my cost of insurance rose every year in my IUL, but stays the same in whole life. So there are problems within the model of IUL that make it an unstable foundation. It's not certain. And that's the core of certainty we need to solve. If you're wanting to have all of the stability in every other area of your life, you need solid foundations and guarantees. So Bruce, I'd love to hear your thoughts as you add to that.
Yeah. So, David, this is another reason why the Institute was set up. And I'm not saying that everybody that goes through the Institute is not going to, we're all human beings. So communication is the problem. And communication is a two-way street, though. We have to take responsibility as both the giver of the information and the receiver of the information. And so, unfortunately, David, the agent that sold you that may have thought that they were communicating that by giving you an illustration where it would have said on the illustration that the cost of insurance is going up. An advisor would help you through each one of them and not rely on you reading the illustration or the contract. But that's the basic premise behind IULs. And this is business in general. Okay. So insurance companies, when term insurance came out, term insurance was 1 year renewable. So in other words, if you bought it at a 25-year-old, it was, you only had it for 1 year, and then you would buy it again at a 26-year-old and then a 27-year, and you would keep doing that, and it would go up a little bit at a time. But what the insurance companies were noticing is as it was going up, people would say, oh, I don't know, this is going up too much now, so I'm going to stop and I'm going to drop this. So what they came out was with different terms, and they actually smoothed out that over that term. So a 10-year term, instead of going up every year, they would just flatten out the cost of that premium for 10 years. Same with 15 years, 20 years, 30 years.
So they just average it and charge the average cost of insurance throughout the term.
Correct. Whole life had been doing that forever. And that's why people say whole life is not good. It's a scam because it's too expensive. I heard this during the think tank. Somebody said that one of their friends said, well, you're putting $15,000 into a policy for $400,000 of coverage. I'm getting $400,000 of coverage for $1,500 a year, and you're paying $15,000. You're stupid. You're getting scammed. Well, that's because after that term period, just look at your term. It's actually going to go up astronomically over the time, that time period. And we always say, as insurance agents, the best insurance policy is the one that's in place at the time of your death.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not saying IULs are absolutely evil, because if you're doing it and you die during that time period that it makes sense, then it was great that you had insurance. But what ends up happening with IULs, they say, we are going to show you how you can get a certain amount of insurance by minimally funding it. And oh, by the way, if that minimum funded cash value doesn't increase enough to go up and take care of the increasing costs within that, then eventually they're going to come to you and say one of two things. They're going to say, we need a lot more money
premium
for you to keep this going, or you need to actually reduce the death benefit for the same amount. That will never happen with whole life. It will never go away, because the funding is the funding over your whole life. And that is what people are never, I should say never. That is because I always explain it, because I do occasionally use IULs, but not for infinite banking, for estate planning purposes. But I also make it very, very clear to a person that it continues to go up and the fees can continue to go up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't utilize it very often. Usually with a very high net worth person that is used to taking risk, and they want to take risk in this situation. But most people, I mean, if we sell 80 policies a year, maybe one of them is an IUL for that purpose, and never for infinite banking, because we tell them that it doesn't work, because now you have another drag, and that is the cost of the financing from the insurance company. So, David, you know, I'm so glad. Can you also talk about, David, why you were looking at the IUL and changed the whole life? What was the purpose? Were you looking at it for purely death benefit, or were you also looking at it for cash value accumulation?
And while we're waiting on that, Bruce, we have a few minutes before we need to wrap up. I think I am very compelled to come back to the first principle that Nelson Nash lays out, and that is think long range. And the reason for thinking long range, I think a lot of times it can be really easy to get sidetracked in different ways of trying to kind of do a similar thing to infinite banking. If you think too short term, you're going to cause problems later on down the road. And so, for instance, if you're saying, well, IUL shows me higher growth rates, and it shows me a higher cash value and less funding required, it can be easy to say, well, right now it looks really good. And so because it looks so great right now, that's why I'm going to make this decision for something like an IUL policy. Or because term insurance is way lower cost than whole life for the same amount of death benefit, let's just go with the term, because today that sounds like it's going to be a better decision. But what about when you get out 40 years from now and your term policy has expired, or you get out 40 years from now and your IUL, as David had mentioned, now you have this cost of insurance increasing and you might have the capability of having to increase your premium or reduce the death benefit. When you're in that position later on down the road, it makes it more clear why we really need to have that long-range thinking up front, because it's going to allow you to make decisions that are best all throughout your life, even if it might not be the greatest benefit today. You make the best decisions when you look the longest term. And Bruce, we can come back to David here if you want.
No, I just commented. He said he did it for cash value accumulation. And, the biggest thing is with IULs, they're going to illustrate a certain presumed interest rate that, or I should say crediting rate, that you're going to credit on the index uninterrupted for the entire time, not getting any zeros. They always, the phrase in the industry is zero is your hero. And yet they never illustrate a zero. They illustrate a uninterrupted compounding of the index crediting. And their argument is that you're going to get that average over a certain period of time. That's an impossibility, because average is not even actual. So that's an important concept. And the second thing is that we don't have time to go into this today, but I would have you rethink your thinking on, is the next 30 years going to be like the past 30 years because of the tremendous amount of debt that we're accumulating here from not having sound money principles of our government, and continue to leverage money and print fiat currency, because we are going to spend a tremendous amount of our income, taxable income, to the United States government on just the interest payments. And just like in our, and I'm going to finish up the program today. If you have excess money flowing to interest, to financing out of your own economy, personal economy, I'm just going to throw out a number. Let's say you have $10,000 coming in every month, but $2,500 of it goes for financing cost. That is $2,500 that you cannot invest or save or give away. And if that happens, you cannot increase your personal gross domestic product or net worth. The United States is gross domestic product. With your personally, it's your net worth. And it just makes perfect sense on an individual basis, but that's what the government's also doing. So the next 30 years, I do not believe are going to be like the last 30 years. So then how can the index perform the way going forward that it like it did the last 30 years?
Bruce, before we close, is there anything that you wanted to leave as a lasting maybe nugget from the Nelson Nash Institute and what was covered there?
Yeah, I would say that there was a ton of things covered, but I think the reason that this is not as there's a trend that's going towards acceptability on what I call the cocktail and barbecue circuit. In other words, cocktail circuit, where people get together, a nice conversation with a bunch of people, or you're outside in your barbecue. People they love to talk about their stocks in that situation. They were afraid to talk about saving money in whole life insurance because they were getting belittled. Oh, that's a stupid place to put your money. That's not a great rate of return. And we always say that's true. It's not about the rate of return. So people wouldn't bring it up. And so it wasn't spreading. Now, because we have a critical mass of people doing this again, like they did the previous 200 years, that there's some momentum involved and we're seeing it, and more people are going to take the banking function back into their lives.
And on that note, Bruce, I've been doing some work thinking generationally and how things multiply over generations. Just imagine the exponential impact of more and more individual people choosing to do infinite banking. If all of those people who are doing infinite banking are also training their children to continue on, then what if each of those people just has two children? That's going to double the people doing infinite banking in the next generation. What if they have three children? That's going to triple the number of people doing infinite banking in future generations. So if you have children, I highly encourage you to train them about having control and certainty in their financial life. And if they can regain the banking function and they can think about their children and grandchildren, you're going to have wealth in your family line that will continue to increase. And so I know Nelson did it. That's my vision. My husband and I have a vision and a desire to do that in our family. And we're wanting to help other people who are wanting to do that as well, create a seven generations legacy. So I will show you. Oh, my book here on the way out the door of this podcast. So go get Seven Generations Legacy. You can find it on Amazon. It's going to be available even in a better way in just the next probably couple of weeks here as well. So Bruce, you look like you want to say something else. Ooh, yes.
Okay. So one of the Money Advantage advisors, Becca Wilhite, just published her Beaver Banker book, which is for children.
Yes.
So you can also go on Amazon and look up the Beaver Banker book from Becca Wilhite. And it's a very nice book of Nelson. It's approved by David Stearns at the Nelson Nash Institute. And so it's another little booklet that you can give your children to get this concept across.
And I don't have mine available right here. It's around the corner. So I've read it. We've read it to our youngest, who is 4 and a half. It is beautifully illustrated. It is a fantastic way to understand infinite banking in the simplest terms about controlling your economy like a beaver does. So a little insight into what the book is all about. And there's a very beautiful ending, how the grandpa in the story is Nelson. So beautiful, beautiful, very well done. And I highly encourage you to get it, even if you don't have kids, because it's going to help you understand from a child's perspective. So anytime something can be simplified, it can be understood. And so Becca's done just a fantastic job of doing that. So in closing, if you want to figure out how to do infinite banking, or you have questions about your policies, or you're in a position of saying, I really want to get this financial certainty and control you're talking about, you can book a call with our advisors on themoneyadvantage.com. And there's a calendar link. You can go right to the calendar and book your call. This is an opportunity to engage in a dialogue and a conversation about your goals, what you have, and where you want to go, so that we can help you get there in the most efficient and effective way possible. Miley, I'm not sure which book you're mentioning here. So Becca Wilhite's book for children is Beaver Bankers. And I'm going to, if I have time,
I'll link it. I just put it in the chat.
Oh, you did. Awesome. Okay. Yeah. Beaver Bankers with Becca Wilhite. Yes. And Seven Generations Legacy is my book as well. So both of those are, I don't have time to go grab the links for you to get those on Amazon, but you can look them up. So I put that in there as well. I also want to remind you that we would love for you to share this episode with your friends, with your family, with your parents, your brothers and sisters, whoever you care about financially, having a sound ability to make financial decisions. If this would be helpful to them in making those choices, this would be a great episode to share with them. Go ahead and give us a thumbs up. Thank you for your comments today. If you're listening later, please still put in your questions and your comments, because we would love to answer them either in that platform or on a future episode. So we love to hear what you're thinking, what you're asking, what you're wondering about infinite banking and about money in general, because we would love to help you get clarity that you need to make decisions. So in closing, please remember, success leaves clues. So model the successful few, not the crowd, and build a life and business you love. We'll see you next time.
Discover the secret of how to earn a return on the same money in two places at the same time, so that you can strengthen your investment returns. We've created a free guide for you that explains the top three things every investor needs their privatized banking system to do. Go to themoneyadvantage.com/banking, put in your name and primary email address, Click the Send My Free Guide button right now, and we'll see you on the inside.